And but I don't know what else. I really don't know. I'm open to listening to anybody. You know, if only somebody would come and show me that I'm wrong, show me that there is something that can be done.
Well, I think you've done a great job of outlining our predicament, and I'm pretty much right alongside you all the way of everything you've said there, most of what you said. And so I think the question is, what can we really do at this point? And I don't know where we're headed as a country. It's if I have to look in at least the short term, I think it's pretty gloomy. The only thing that I can see at this point is just, as I've said it many times, is to keep talking, keep sharing information. I think anyone listening to you tonight, I think you've said the words that many people that have in the back of their mind, and you've articulated them pretty well. The fellow down at the beach that I just mentioned, he was the same predicament. He says, you know, it seems so crazy, so insane, and so corrupted. What in the world can we do? His idea, I thought it was kind of interesting, but he was talking about having some form of a national strike that would at least get the attention of the powers that be. And he said, maybe have an entire day where no one goes to work. Just declare a national strike day.
Uh-huh.
Don't buy
it. No strike, sure. That's one of the most powerful weapons there is, if you can get people to do it.
Well, it certainly would take someone a lot more connections than what I have, but it'd be interesting to pick out some date and several months hence and say, this is the day that we're just saying no to the government. No, you can't do this anymore. No, you don't have my consent to actually present that. That was his idea.
Uh-huh.
And beyond that, the only thing that I can think of doing at this point in time is to keep talking.
Well, it's a wonderful... one thing I did not too long ago when the war, the War Powers Act came up and so on. Anyway,
right.
I wrote a kind of a long letter to several of the more lively members of the Congress, and it ended I just said, suppose, just as a mad possibility, just suppose that you were to become convinced in your own, obviously each person would have to come to this conclusion, but suppose you became convinced that the President of the United States was certifiably insane. What would you do? What do you think you could do if you came to that conclusion? I don't know what I think the answer is not a goddamn, not a darn thing. But I certainly didn't get an answer from anybody, and I haven't gotten an answer from anybody who's seen the letter, What would you do? Suppose that you really,
Well, that's what I started off the show with just that question. What are the implications that if we did have a government that created a coup d'etat in 1963, where are we now as a country? Well, Tom, I've enjoyed co-hosting the show here with you tonight.
well, me too. Tom, I'm very grateful to you. I haven't had a chance to get this off my chest anywhere else. And
well, that's great. I'm sure
I'm
you gave a lot
for the space.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you next Monday at 7 o'clock.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, one and all. Well, this is Tom Clooney. I'll be with you next Monday at 7 o'clock.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, well, right now we have with us on the line Tammy O'Brien. And Tammy lives here in Santa Cruz, and she has a horror story to tell you about Child Protective Services. And, of course, people look at Child Protective Services, gee, we've got to protect our children, you know. What about child abuse and child beating and child sexual abuse and on in this litany of things? And, yes, these things do on occasion exist, but unfortunately many of the real problems with child abuse and child sexual abuse and satanic abuse are never addressed. In fact, you hardly ever talk about the satanic abuse of children in our society. And you have to understand that what they've done is they've sort of mixed up child abuse with child sexual abuse, and they've convinced people we've just got to have this government agency out there to protect the little children because they're so concerned about the children. But if you understand the occult agenda behind everything going on, you need to go back and you need to read Plato's The Republic, because that's really the blueprint for what's going on today. The society with a ruling elite, a massive police force and military that, of course, subjects the people. And then, of course, doing away with marriage. And all children belong to the state. And that's really the basic theme of so much of what's going on today. That's why they're doing what they're doing in the schools, because the children don't belong to you. They belong to the state. And, of course, so that's what child abuse is all about, child abuse prevention, the CPS, Child Prevention Services. Why, of course, the children are not yours. The state is there to intervene and come between you and your children. Well, Tammy, I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got mixed up with CPS.
Okay. I basically originally called for help during a time period where we had just moved into our house. We had bought a house, and basically it was still in my mother-in-law's name, thank God, or we probably would have lost it considering all that we went through. It seems that the thing they're interested in most is not only your children but also your money. And it's basically a big money game, as far as I can tell, because my experience was I asked for help after having whooping cough, and they have these flyers up basically in every doctor's office in Santa Cruz of a group called Families Together, which is a completely ironic name. So is Child Protective Services. They have no intention of protecting your children. They want to damage them as much as possible or steal them.
Well, I'm sure there's some good people work for it, but
there's a few that are basically renegade in terms of their, you know, anti-family agenda.
Sure. And, well, those are the ones we're concerned about. So basically, your child had whooping cough. Now,
our whole family had whooping cough.
Your whole family had whooping cough.
Yeah, and actually, it hit my youngest and myself the worst.
All right, fine. Now, did they come after you because your children hadn't been immunized, or what was it?
The first call from the doctor's office was that I was not open to immunizations. And I was basically being polite, telling her that, no, I don't want to do it. But the way she reported it was that I was ambivalent and I wasn't sure about it. That wasn't the case at all. I had had, in fact, one of the reasons I went to her was to have my daughter looked over after having a severe reaction to just one DT shot. And myself, I had severe reactions as a child. And it turns out about 1% of the population is actually allergic,
sure,
not just to the antigens, but also to the preservatives,
sure,
the mercury, whatever,
right,
that are put in it.
So basically you decided not to immunize your children.
Definitely not.
All right, fine.
Not a possibility.
Did the doctor report you automatically to CPS, or how did that
work? She asked me, have you ever hit your children any place other than their buttocks? And I had to think a minute, and being the honest person that I am, I thought, I didn't think twice about, oh, she's going to report me or something like that. And I thought, why is she asking this? Is she, you know, I didn't think anything like
that.
Don't
you know that the doctors are extensions of the state, and at least some of them consider that? They'll ask you about your guns. You know, they ask all sorts of personal questions, and then they keep files that they turn over to the government, because every doctor's file belongs to the government, of course, today.
Yes, I know that now. Unfortunately, then I said, well, there was one time, and I was in a public situation, and I was at the grandmother's house, and my daughter had said a word that was not appropriate, and I just kind of tapped her on the side of her head, basically told her, no, you're not going to do that. You're not going to say that in the presence of your grandmother. 7.
All right, fine. Well, you probably deserve just what you got.
Well, you know, it was just a quick reaction that was like, you are not going to speak that way in front of your grandmother.
Sure.
That's all there is to it. And because I was just, basically, I was very naive in terms of being honest with doctors, being honest with teachers, being honest with social workers, because they can lie. Basically, I had no idea. That was my big naivety, is that there's a court system that exists that you can walk in, and they never say, do you promise to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth? That never happened. You never see the Bible, nothing. You're never going to see a jury. I mean, it's a kangaroo court. It's something totally Orwellian. I cannot believe that that kind of court system exists.
All right, fine. So basically, you told the doctor that one time you slapped your child, daughter. Or
and she said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to report that. And I was like, okay, and then I got
I would certainly have changed my doctors right at that time.
Oh, yeah, I did, but the letter in the mail came from CPS, a letter saying, well, when you move, your children might need more sleep, and you need to be more aware of that change is difficult, so give them their special blanket and this and that. Anyway, it was basically, that was my first encounter with the letter. The next encounter came from a woman from Healthy Start, who's at the school, who was a special advocate for particularly homeschooling parents. My children were in charter school. I had a second grader and kindergartner at the time. And basically, she had asked me, did I need any extra supplies? Could I use a computer or a desk? And I said, well, sure. And when she came to deliver it, she was supposed to come at like 4 o'clock. She ended up coming about 6, so I thought she wasn't coming. And I gave the kids their bath, and we were getting ready to eat dinner, and basically she asked me if she could use the bathroom. And I felt very uncomfortable, but I thought, oh, you know, what's the harm in using the bathroom? But, because there were wet towels on the floor, that was her report, was that there were wet towels.
But you never should have let them into the house.
Never. Never let them
into
the
house. Why would you do that? Well, I know you did.
Well, I didn't know that this person.
I'm sorry, Tammy.
Yeah, I didn't know about mandated reporters. I didn't know that this was a crime to have wet towels on your bathroom.
You never let anybody from the government in, because they're going to put out a report on you. And, you know, when they offer, they're not giving you something for nothing.
Oh, definitely not.
When they give you something, they're going to take away your freedom.
Well, and that's the thing, is they say free child care, free respite care, free transportation, free playgroup, free counseling, everything, free lunches. I mean, you name it, they offer it for free. And I'll tell you what, the price is way too high.
Okay, fine. So basically, now you've got a report because you had towels on the floor in the bathroom after the kids had the bath?
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine.
Then the next report was a woman who came up to me in the park, and turned out later she was a social worker. I didn't know. But she was just acting as a friend, and she had a couple of kids, and she was she was also a homeschooler. So that was one of the reasons why I trusted her. Right off the bat was, you know, her children were quite behind, though, and she basically wanted me to help her with her kids, and in trade she was going to help me do housework and watch my kids while I did the schooling thing. And I basically, her children's situation was that they were quite far behind for their age, and I felt that I couldn't handle it, and I basically said, no, I don't want to do this. And it turns out that she ended up reporting me also for no immunizations, because I had shared with her my experience. And basically, her viewpoint was that that was a dangerous thing. And, you know, I thought the Santa Cruz area was quite liberal in terms of being open about
choices. No, you must understand that the liberalism here means all power to the state. This is not liberalism. This is fascism, and they hide behind this mantra of liberalism. But the liberal fears the state. The liberal wants to restrict the power of the state. The true liberal, the liberals we have here now, some of them we really are honest-to-goodness liberals, but others have really embraced this platonic idea of the all-powerful state, to help us common folks.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's upside down. You know, the sanctity of the family is the cornerstone of society, and if you start ripping families apart, You're just tearing the society up.
But that's what it's all about. That was the Plato's idea. There were to be no families. There were to be no husband and wives. All women were to belong to all men. And of course, look what a great job they've done in destroying the family. I mean, we have this thing called the marriage tax. Why do they tax marriage higher than they do? Because they really don't want marriage. They know what they're doing. You subsidize what you want. You, of course, punish what you don't want. And, of course, they did not want people married because married people have children and married people have stable relationships when you have a good family. And this is not what they want in this utopian society that they're planning.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, if you just look at how the aid for dependent children system works, if you have a husband that makes a minimum wage, basically, or a lower, you know, than poverty level wage, which they consider $42,000 for two children, four people. If you have that minimum wage, you're in a situation where if you don't have a husband, you're actually going to get more money from the state for kicking them out.
And that's exactly what's happening, especially in the inner city black family. We've destroyed the black family with our welfare system.
Right.
It never existed. The black family was a strong family prior to when the government came in to help them. And look what they've done today. 75% of black children are born out of wedlock.
Yeah, and it's an assimilation of what they want to try to create in terms of breaking down the family is that there doesn't have to be love. There doesn't have to be stable relationships. It's just centered on sex.
Right.
Not anything to do with, you know, that love is an invisible thing that you can't see. When they take apart a family, the damage, my husband and I used to talk about, we felt like we were beat up with baseball bats every day. You just couldn't see the bruises. The pain was so deep. I mean, your heart just burns for your children, and you can't do anything. It's like having a knife to your throat. You can't fight back. Because, I mean, the fight or flight thing, you don't have a choice. You can't fight. There's nothing you can do because they have your kids. And you can't fly because you have to stay and jump through all their hoops, their psychological tests, their, you know, every other test. I thought that at first we fought. We said, we're not going to do it. We're not doing the psychological evaluation. You're just doing that to get more information on us. We're not going to do the counseling for our children. There's been no evidence that shows they need counseling. Just on and on of the things that they want you to do, the parent center. Never mind that I had 30 credits in early childhood education, a 4.0 grade average. They don't care about what your actual history is. They just want to put as many hoops in front of you that you have to jump through as possible, because if you don't jump through all their hoops within an 18-month period, they get to keep your kids permanently.
Well, now tell us what happened. So you've got, the first of all, the doctor reports you, then the social worker who just came because she wanted to bring you a computer and she just liked you so much reports you, and then the woman reports you. Now, was she really working for a child a CPS? Was she really a social worker, or was she simply angry at you because you didn't want to help her?
Pretty much angry that I didn't want to help her. You know, I don't know. I still to this day don't really know what her motivation was. I mean, I of course have been very angry at what she did, and you know, when I saw her again, I said, you know, I know that you called, and I think that it was a very unfair thing to do that they took my children. She was shocked. So
you should have reported her, you know. In fact, you ought to report everybody.
Well, you know, that was the temptation, definitely. Well, but you know what? I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Of course you wouldn't, because you don't want to play this system. But I understand how frustrated you are.
Yeah, I mean, the kids have a problem.
That doesn't do you any good. This woman is shocked after she... But you see, what they're trying to do is get everybody informing on everybody else. This is what the TIPS program was all about that President Bush tried to install. He'll get it in sooner or later. But everybody informing on everybody else, of course, in the name of preserving our freedom.
Well, and even they have an 800 number now for children to report other children in North Carolina.
Okay, well, anyway, now you've got three strikes against you. So what happened?
So I have a baby in the Dominican hospital, and I get Medi-Cal because basically our house was still in escrow. We couldn't move in, and I didn't have the finances to hire a midwife and do it, you know, like my aunt's house or something. So basically we were in transition waiting for our house to be open. And when I had the baby at 4:30 in the morning, and I had been in labor for about 70 hours because I didn't feel comfortable being in the hospital. I had home birth with all my other children, which is a big red flag to them. They don't like that. That means you're definitely bucking the system. And pretty much within 4 hours, they knocked on my door at 8:30 in the morning, and a social worker came in to ask me why I was refusing the hepatitis B shot.
Oh, boy.
And so we got in a big discussion about that, and I thought that my discussing it and showing her my education on the subject would curtail their their efforts, but basically she gave me a list of books that I should look at to, you know, herd immunity and all these other things, and I was like, I have a lot of books on the subject and my mind is already made up, you know. And she basically, she sent the public health nurse to come and talk to me. Now, meanwhile, you realize I've only slept, I didn't even really sleep. I maybe had caught an hour's sleep, and I hadn't even called my mother yet to tell her, you know, that I had a boy or girl or anything. And these people are coming in and asking me why I'm not doing the immunization.
You just,
you know, and that
it's no business of theirs why you're not doing it. In a free society, you have a right to say no. And just ask them, you know, what I usually do is say, well, you know, just sign this slip that says that you will be full responsibility if there are any problems referable to this, or, you know, are there any complications with my children, that the hospital will bear full financial responsibility. And, of course, they will not do that.
They won't do that, no. But I signed several papers that were later used to say that I was not willing to cooperate with Western medicine. Basically, that was one of the things they used in court, is that I believed in alternative medicine. And
well, I'll tell you what, you know, I'm sure you know that hepatitis B is probably one of the most reactive vaccines that we have, and because of molecular mimicking, so many of these children will have neurological problems. And they full well know that.
Oh, they know
it. And there's no
sure.
justification at all. This is a gigantic social experiment. And of course, it's a very, very profitable experiment as well, although the price of that has come down from about $80, I checked the other day, to $15 or $16 that you can get the shot for, the medicine. But still, you should have the right to determine whether you want it for your children or not. So because you refuse to give it to them, that marked that down against you as well?
Yeah, basically. That was their big issue for me was the immunizations. That was... Even after they gave my children back, they sent me a letter 2 days later that if I did not comply, because I had very carefully worded a statement saying that I would consider the immunization if they were able to do a test outside of the body. It's called a luminescence test, where they, in the antigen, they injected a certain luminary function, which you watch the cells and see whether or not the, you know, natural cells of your body can, you know, the white immune cells, whatever, can digest the antigen.
Now, was this when they still had the thimerosal, the poisonous mercury in the hepatitis B?
Yes, they do. And also, the thing is that you can tell, they have this test where they watch the respiratory burst, and they can see whether or not you already have the natural immunity or not, or whether or not having this immunization would actually cause a bad reaction. The thing is that this test costs about $300, and they weren't willing to do that. You know, I said I would be willing to do the immunization if you can do this outside and prove to me without a doubt that my child's not going to have a bad reaction. And I said, I was like, why don't you study my kids? I've got, you know, five healthy kids that are strong, robust, no problems, and this one child that had a shot is very skinny and basically gets sick pretty easily. You know, she's got a compromised immune system from one DT shot. And I know of people who have lost their children. I know of a nurse that she did shots, and she had no idea. And her child has got, you know, severe immune dysfunction, and cerebral palsy is another word for really they don't know what it is, but something's wrong with her brain. There was an ad in the Mercury News, not an ad, but a front page coverage about that they found in brain cancer in children. The root of it was the rhesus monkey kidney cell, which is what they grow the, particularly the tetanus cells on in order to inject them into human beings. And I just think that, you know, we have natural immunity and that the shots they're giving is an artificial immunity. In fact, whooping cough, like 85% of all people who get it are fully immunized. So it's not, getting a shot is not going to solve the problem. It's a matter of building your immune system, being strong. You know, I feel that, you know, studying super immunity as far as health and what children eat should be the parents' first priority, which is what I do. Was I given any credit for that? None. None whatsoever. So my feeling is if they could get me, I mean, we look at 2,000 years ago, Jesus was born in a manger. 12 years later, his parents, you know, forgot about him for 3 days before they realized where he was. I mean, he would have been taken from birth according to their standards. And I mean, even now, look at the family of generation, just the last generation. My mother-in-law is a social worker, and she would hit my husband with a wooden stick, a wooden spoon, when he was bad. And that was, I mean, that's a weapon. If you said that in court now, boom, you'd lose your kid just like that. So they consider spanking abuse by the way.
I know you do. Well, yeah. First of the thing is that they have confused sexual abuse with, spanking a child. You know,
they accused us of molestation just because we had all girls. That's it. There was no other evidence of it whatsoever. And now, fortunately, it wasn't in place when I went through the system, but recently they passed through a bill, it was like H.R. 1625, where now if the child is suspected of having abuse, molestation, they bring in a special team that will check the child. And, I'm sorry for if there's any young listeners, maybe you shouldn't listen, but internally they check girls, and also externally they check boys with what's called a penile phlegmography. And if a boy has a reaction to the pictures they show them, now this is being paid for by your tax dollars, by the way, bestiality, animals, and adult sex, and also child sex. And if the child has an erection, that child will be labeled a potential sex offender. And there's a case of a boy who's been in a mental hospital since he was 7 years old, and he's now 12, because he had an erection during this test. I mean, this is ridiculous that they can label somebody. And that was because they did the test on this little boy, because when he had a visitation with his mom for an hour and a half, which is all they usually give you in a day, like once a week or once every 2 weeks, he was crying and wouldn't let go of his mother. And so, I mean, that's the most natural thing in the world. But they called that was possible, that he was being molested. That's why he didn't want to let go of his mommy. And I'm like, this is so twisted.
Well, of course it's all twisted. But anyway, did they actually take your children away from you?
Yes, they did.
Did you get them back?
I did. That's my big pat on the back. That was my consolation prize. I proved myself innocent after 50 days and got my kids back. You know, never mind. The reason I'm doing this is because there's a whole lot of people out there that can't prove they're innocent.
How long ago did you get them back?
It's been 3 years now.
All right, fine. Well, of course, but this is a very, very common thing. And you have no rights in these courts. This is the problem, and people don't understand that. And
well, the first thing, that's
most
the thing.
Most lawyers won't even take these cases because they realize that you do not have an open or legitimate court system there.
Yeah, the first thing that they said in court was, have your clients agreed to give up their rights, because they had both appointed my husband and myself a separate independent public pretender, I call them, because they both lied to us. But, and then they, appoint a lawyer for the children. And, of course, all their checks are being cut by CPS, so they're all coming from the same source.
Well, of course, whoever pays the piper calls the tune, and, of course, you really can't get into a system like that with one of their lawyers, because they're not honest.
No, I mean, definitely not.
The whole idea is to get you to plead or agree to something so that will be the end of it.
And that's right.
This is why they send innocent people to prison because of the corruption in the courts.
That's right.
I mean, there was a case in New York City recently. Oh, it was several years ago, where there were five boys who were running around and pretty wild in the park, and some woman was molested and raped, and I don't know whether she was murdered or not. But anyway, all these boys eventually pleaded guilty and went to prison. And then two or three late years later, somebody else confessed to the crime. The DNA proved that he was guilty. And that actually forced these boys by pressure and by turning them against one another and by threats and by extensive questioning to plead guilty. All of them pleaded guilty to a crime they didn't commit.
Right, right.
And this is what's going on in America today. And where is the outrage from the people?
Well,
where is the outrage from the church? And, of course, it's deafening in its silence.
Well, that's the thing, is people are afraid to stand up against what sounds like a good thing, child protection. I mean, who wants to stand up against protecting? The reality is that they're not protecting. They're hurting. They're not interested in really taking care of the injured children. They're going after, it's a big money, billion-dollar kidnapping ring, as far as I'm concerned. They kidnapped my children, and they were trying to steal them.
But what the thing is, that they get federal funds if they can get these children away from you. And, according to some of the people we've talked to, Assemblyman Throckmorton, who was with the State Assembly back in Utah, and he headed the Assembly Committee on this, in Utah, the CPS, got some $25,000 for every child they could steal away. And they got it from the federal government.
That's right.
And then they could spend it on all their goodies and salaries and salary increases. And then, of course, they hire all these. And it created an empire. And his whole thrust of coming onto my program on several times was to say, we've got to stop the federal funding. And the only way to do that is to cut off the federal funds.
Stop the money, period.
Right.
The money, period, has to stop. When people want to adopt a child, they should have the money to be able to take care of that child. They don't need any extra money from social services. There's plenty of people out there who want a baby. I mean, who doesn't want a baby? I mean, especially they're working on getting children after the diapering and all that is done. They want to take them when they're 2 or 3 years old so that, you know, all the nights that you spend up burping them and taking care of teething problems and whatever like that are done. And it's like the cuckoo bird, you know, they just push them all, you know. They don't have to, their agenda is they don't have to worry about having a family because they know they can go get free children anytime they want.
Well, now, basically, they took your children. Was it based upon these 3 incidents or were there other incidences, Tammy?
It was basically the accusation against me was a messy house. Because and when the social worker comes
with 5 kids and you had a messy house.
Oh, you know, that's the thing is that the house. I live in a small house. It's about 900 square feet, and we have, you know, at the time we had 4 kids. And I'll tell you what, I can clean the house spick and span, and I can turn around in about an hour if I let them, you know, loose and play with the paint and the crayons and whatever else that they have. There'll be a mess. I mean, that's all there is to it. Kids are messy. And that's life. I mean, I'm not worried about raising a clean house. I'm worried about raising happy children.
Sure.
And the thing is that they shouldn't be able to take kids for a messy house because that is so subjective.
But
my house
is
not messy. Yeah. That's the thing that gets me. It's look at this. They make this report on February 9th that my house is messy. They remove my children on March 5th when my house is completely clean on an emergency basis. I mean, come on. The thing is that the lawyer...
But the thing is, Tammy, that they are not held responsible for doing the wrong thing.
No, they are not.
And that, of course, is the thing. Until we can hold government bureaucrats responsible.
Well,
and
that's
of course,
the thing
they, they are exempt from the law. And I know you probably talked to our friend Robbie Robertson up there in Wenatchee, Washington.
Yeah.
And, of course, the things that were done, I mean, they arrested some, I don't know, about 40 people. They got 25 of them to plead guilty by threatening to send them to jail for life or simply, for 25 years and faced with difference between 25 years and life and then threatening, you know, to put them into the open prison where they'd be abused by the other prisoners. Because they were child molesters, they managed to intimidate a lot of innocent people. Every one of those people is out of prison, but no thanks to anybody in that governmental system. Fortunately, they brought in lawyers from out of that community, and the Supreme Court of Washington made sure that eventually there was law and order. But you had a totally corrupt local community in Wenatchee, and the trouble is the churches allowed it to happen and refused to take a stand. And that, is just unconscionable. We have so many ministers today who have far more fear of, I don't think they have any fear of God at all. And they're one day going to have to answer. Because I believe the community represents or reflects the church. And the church has failed. And it's failing in this community because they're not speaking out about these things.
No, it's all hush-hush. In fact, even my church, when I brought up what happened, they said, shh, you know, don't talk about that. It makes us look bad. And I was like, come on. Why does that make us look bad? I'm being accused of things that I never did. Why does that make you look bad? I mean, why can't you stand up for me? And, I mean, this is a church that I dedicated my life to for 18 years. You know, I completely sacrificed, you know, for 10 years as a full-time fundraiser to help the church. And yet I didn't get any support when it happened. And even after the fact, even friends I had, we're like, well, you know, maybe you should just let it go and forget about it and just go on with your life and, you know, drop it. You can't just do that. It's not so easy.
I'm glad you haven't, Tammy, and I think it's important, and I want to get your message out far and wide because you're certainly very articulate. We're going to have, though, to take a break. When we get back, of course, we'll invite calls from out across America or even from Wenatchee, Washington, where I know we have listeners tonight here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we'll be right back with Tammy O'Brien. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And, of course, on the weekends, our programs are heard in 34 or 35 different stations. And, of course, our dream is of actually syndicating our programs and getting them to a much larger audience. And we hope if you're out there and you believe in what we're doing, you want to think about joining the Radio Liberty family or helping us in any way you can so that we can get the truth out, because people are not getting the truth. And because they don't know the truth, why, of course, we're losing our freedom. So if you'd like to seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Or, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get a copy of our newsletter. We'd be glad to send you a free copy. The October newsletter, of course, is Christian Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence on the 18th of September last year. And the points he raises about the September 11th attack the previous year, her husband had died in the South Tower, should cause everybody to realize that we're not being told the truth. And the administration that is using that terrible tragedy and the loss of 3,000 lives, that administration is using that watershed event, the terrorist attack, to justify first a war on Afghanistan and then a war on Iraq, and who knows who will go to war with this. But, of course, remember that war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, may have serious repercussions here at home. In fact, I'm firmly convinced that it will. So if you would like to, help us get the truth out, if you'd like a free copy of that October newsletter, we hope that if you get it, you'll copy it and give it to others. And, of course, introduce them, first of all, to our ministry, and secondly, to the remarks of a woman who lost her husband and has investigated what happened and is firmly convinced that the government knew ahead of time and did nothing to stop the attack. So if you'd like to get that information, and you can go up on the web and pull down Kristen Breitweiser's testimony from the Senate Intelligence Committee, or as I did, I called Washington, D.C. to get my copy of it, and they were nice enough to send it. But of course, CBS and ABC and NBC and all the major media, oh, their reporters were there. The television cameras were grinding when Kristen Breitweiser testified. But, of course, that never reached the average American, because, you see, there's such a degree of control that exists today of what the American people think. And what we do 5 hours a day is try to bring out the truth and the facts, the information you're not going to get elsewhere. So we hope that many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family. We hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can pull our programs down on the Internet there 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished, but maybe an hour a day or 2 hours a day if you'd like to listen to those programs, or you can pull them down. We archive a number of our programs, the Radio Liberty programs. We archive the other programs on the American Freedom Network and Genesis. They archive, but we have many of the same guests there, so you can get the programs off of our website at radioliberty.com. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, the Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Tammy O'Brien. And, of course, the telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you have a question to comment on. But, you know, I've heard similar stories from many, many people in the past, Tammy. And the trouble is most people don't read the books I do. They don't necessarily listen to the same programs or talk to the same people. But I remember going to a Senate hearing on this subject with a number of state senators and assemblymen were there. And I was just seeing this one gentleman. He worked for the correctional agency. I think he worked in a prison as a guard, and just almost weeping, telling about how they'd taken away his daughter and he could never get her back again. Wow. And so often the children, you know, are taken and they're put into abusive homes, foster homes. Many times these children are sexually molested in them, or other times it's just a tremendous psychological impact on these children. Many of these children are damaged for their whole lives because of, they've been taken away from the security of their families. Well, how did your children respond to being placed in foster homes?
Well, psychologically, I can still see the damage. At the time, nervous tics started to occur. My oldest daughter my second daughter became much more violent and angry. She was repeatedly injured by in the care of the foster situation. Even though it was my mother-in-law was an old lady. She didn't have the patience to deal with an unruly child. And, you know, she would hurt her in trying to get her to do things. And, you know, stuffing a bar of soap in her mouth, pinching her arms to pull her into a room on timeout. You know, she pushed her down a couple of times. Things happened, you know, that were, you know, like going to bed without dinner because they wouldn't eat salad. But I think the main thing is that psychologically, security of knowing that your parents are there to protect you and love you is the number one thing that all children, all people need.
Sure.
And to take that away randomly without thought, I mean, even the animal kingdom, you can't get away with that. If you try to do that to a grizzly bear, you know, I think the social worker should try to take a cub and then they'd get the just rewards they deserve. But, you know, basically human beings are, we're very sensitive. You can't just jerk kids around from one house to another and think that that's going to be a way to solve the problems. That it's absolutely the opposite. My family, I feel, has suffered irreparable damage. My kids were basically kidnapped and put in the care of people who had no interest in really taking care of them. I mean, they felt it was a burden. They were angry about it. They didn't want it. They threatened me constantly. The power that they had over me was complete. I mean, if I didn't do exactly what they said, or she said, I was completely not allowed to see my children as much as I could have. She put it down to the minimum, hour and a half a day, whereas I was technically allowed to see them from 10 in the morning till 10 at night. So my case was kind of unusual in that respect, because if you have a family that doesn't really support your views or, you know, has a different agenda, then you can really hit in a lot of pain and suffering in family relationships. It's basically destroyed all of the extended family relationships that we had.
Well, now, of course, who did they put the children with? They put them, one of your daughters with your mother-in-law?
Yeah, the first 10 days, my mother-in-law was in Europe, and they placed them with two great aunts. One was 90, and the other one was 88. And in that situation, the first 10 days, I was able to stay with the two younger children who were 15 months and 3 years old. So the first 10 days wasn't so bad, but as soon as my mother-in-law got back, they went to her house, and basically that next 40 days was quite intense. Particularly, they gave my older children back at the 28-day mark and said that we'll give these older children back as a trial, but you must put them in public school. That was the court order. And so I was like, okay, I'll do that. That's no problem. But they wouldn't give me the two younger back because they said I needed to get used to taking care of the two older. Well, that was incredibly difficult because then I had to take care of four kids in two different places. And it was, you know, the younger kids needed me more. If it had been, I mean, any kind of social worker with a brain would know that the 15-month-old needs its mother more than the 8-year-old. And, you know, every night to say goodbye to them, the screaming and the crying and the fear, they still suffer from separation anxiety. All of them do. When I leave, they're, you know, they want to make sure they kiss me goodbye, and they, you know, they're very afraid of being without me because
sure.
They're, you know, it's just they had a bad experience and they were too young to understand. I mean, how do you tell a 3-year-old why she can't come home? Her sisters can be home, but she can't. I mean, that one's really impossible. As far as her nature now and her reticence, I mean, the things that I see in her eyes, it's not, I mean, the stress that they went through was unreal. You know, even the stress that I went through, I think most people suffer incredible physical damage that you may not see right away, but it's there. So, I mean, your parents are the ones who love you. They're your parents love you more than their life. I mean, what is our society based on? It's based on we love our children. We want to give everything to them. There's even laws of the flesh where if you're adopted, you can't receive inheritance. It's, you know, the inheritance of love and life and lineage and your standard of conscience. These are all the things that are God-given rights. I mean, our ancestors would turn over in their graves if they saw what was happening to our children in this day and age. I feel so strongly that there needs to be a fire lit. I mean, there's a lot of kindling out there. We know that there's a lot of problems with what's going on in terms of their power. There's books out of control by Brenda Scott, who's watching out for our child protective agencies. There's no oversight. There's no one no type of public oversight committee that's making sure that what they're doing is at all under the law. They're totally operating under the color of law, and it's outside of the Constitution.
Well, it's because they have these special courts, they have this special protection.
Right.
You know, and they have protection, but the parents have no protection.
That's right.
And you really have no rights in these courts because these are administrative courts, they're not legal, and you can't even have a trial by jury, can you?
Never. You'll never see a jury. In fact, we were told that if we tried to have a trial, period, if we didn't just accept whatever the judge gave us, if we tried to go to trial, that the judge wouldn't like that, and that she would be harder on us, and it would take us longer to get back our children. Actually, at one point, I called for a Marsden because my lawyer had lied to me twice, and my husband's lawyer had lied to him a couple times, too, and we basically...
Well, what do you expect from a lawyer? I mean, there are a few honest lawyers out there, but the whole idea of law is not to tell the truth. I mean, this is why over 100 people have been taken off a death row, because they were sent there by prosecutors who lied, who withheld evidence, who, basically they're supposed to turn over exculpatory evidence to the defense. They refused to do it. Over 100 people had been condemned to death in this country because of prosecutors' malfeasance, and not one of those prosecutors has ever been punished. We have a different set of laws for lawyers and for us common folks. And until we have moral people within our legal system, and we reshape our legal system based upon God's law rather than men's law and a ruling elite, why, we'll continue having problems. We have to get back to God's law, and we have to have moral people as judges, and we have to have moral people as prosecutors. We're interested in getting the truth, and you know that old picture that they used to have, you know, in courts about, you know, a justice blindfolded carrying the scales, and you know, the justice was supposed to be blind.
Yeah.
It's not blind at all
under
this system.
No. Definitely not. I mean, even the social workers' mantra is, when in doubt, yank them out. Because of the liability factor, there was a turning point in a case in New York, I think it was 1986, where a young black girl was being taken care of by grandmother and mother who thought she was possessed by a demon, so they proceeded to feed her poison and kill her. And the Child Protective Services had placed them back in that care, and they ended up suing and winning, because, I mean, isn't that ironic? They got the child back, but they sued because they got the child back. And they killed the child, and they won money for killing their own child. I mean, that's really upside down. I have no idea how that turned, but that changed the whole situation of liability now, because they cannot get hurt if they take the child. If they leave the child at the home and something happens, well, then they can be sued.
Well, I think they should be sued for taking the child out without good justification. Now, did they ever try to force you to give your children the hepatitis B vaccine?
Oh, yeah. They even the second lawyer I got said, why don't you just do the immunizations and then they'll give you your kids back? And I said, over my dead body, it's not going to happen.
Good for you. Well, because I'll tell you, that hepatitis B vaccine, first of all, it had, now, of course, they've suddenly said, well, there is thimerosal in it. But, of course, now we're going to put a special legislation through so that nobody can be sued for all the damage and all the autism and all the complications and mental deficiency caused by giving the mercury to immature brains, you know, and of course mercury tends to settle off in the brain.
Right.
And of course they know that, and now they're suddenly very embarrassed, because if the American people knew that they'd been giving our children vaccines with levels of mercury that are so far above even the levels of the EPA, why, they would never trust the public health establishment again, and they shouldn't. Not until every one of those people there has been gotten rid of, and they get people there who are interested not in, of course, retiring and getting a job for the work drug company, but really in protecting the public health. But a nation without moral people, of course, soon falls to where we are today.
Well, also a nation with compromised immune systems, and I believe that mercury stores, and more than likely when your body can't handle some kind of a toxin, generally it turns in on itself in something we call cancer. They can't figure out where it's coming from. Well, hello, about 90% of all cadavers now have cancer since we've introduced immunizations. In Germany, they've had forced immunizations for years, and actually they have a higher incidence of disease than our country, who allows choice. I mean, the thing is that if you understand the issues and you study, there's simple decisions that you have to make in terms of looking at the incidence of when they introduced vaccines in the 50s. What brought down the incidence of disease was simple sanitary measures.
Sure, and of course, this is the thing that we really, it's going to be up to the individual to begin to educate the doctors. They really don't understand what had happened to the incidence of disease before the advent of vaccines. Certainly the smallpox vaccine was wonderful. The polio vaccine was wonderful, except they didn't test it before they gave it. They gave 93 million people a vaccine that contained a cancer-producing virus, SV40, and that was in the original Salk vaccine. And then, of course, they were afraid to tell the people that, and so then they refused to pull the contaminated vaccine until the Sabin vaccine was ready, and then they grew the Sabin vaccine and the green monkey, and they gave us all the green monkey viruses. Right. And now they really can't tell the American people, and everything is cover-up. And the trouble is, the average doctor has no idea what's going on, the fact that thimerosal or that most of the vaccines contain mercury. In fact, they're now in the process of using up all the mercury-containing vaccines because they don't want to hurt the profit margin, and they don't care how many children are injured by that, and that's unconscionable.
Oh, that's the thing, is that I kept saying, my daughter's been injured by a vaccine. You want me to give all of my children an immunization? It's just not going to happen. They sent letters from doctors who said that they thought the O'Brien children should be immunized based on, you know, the typical standard status quo.
If you ever need anybody on the other side, I will be glad to appear at any hearing and give the information on these vaccines. And I'll tell you what, I practiced medicine for many years. I used to believe in all these things until I began doing the studies and began getting the information and checking it out at the major libraries and found out what the statistics were and the dramatic fall and the incidence of measles. Do you realize in the year they started giving measles vaccine in the United States, there were only 44 deaths in the entire country from measles. It had been, literally tens of thousands initially. But by 1960s, the incidence of death from measles had fallen and fallen dramatically. And how many children do we have with autism, after getting the MMR vaccine? It used to be about 2 children every 10,000, and now it's 1 child in 250 in America.
Well, that's
autism,
the thing, is it? It's
because,
mutated.
And there is a great deal of evidence that suggests it's directly related to the vaccines we've been giving them.
Right, because if you give a certain strain of the virus, that doesn't mean that you're going to be protected from a more mutant strain. And the particular, there was a school in Texas where they had 100% immunization, yet the whole school broke out in measles. And, one kid died. But basically, I think that the fact that they can inflict, like, the cruelest punishment possible, to me, the greatest torture. I've suffered some difficult things in my life, but definitely to lose my children for that time period was the greatest pain I've ever experienced. And I pray that nobody else has to ever go through it. If at all possible, the number one message to get out there is do not let anyone that you don't know well in your door. I'm sorry, but it's not just social work. Anyone who works with children in an official position of any type is basically told about the rules of being a mandatory reporter.
Don't ever tell your doctor the truth either, because the doctor no longer represents you. The doctor is an advocate for the government, and that is what's so tragic. Your records, if they write anything in those records, those are open to the government.
Well, and then they say, I could lose my job. I'm like, that's not going to happen. They very rarely ever go after a doctor for not reporting this or that, it's just such a hype. The thing is that the purpose of law itself is to prevent the arbitrary abuse of power. What's most important, it fails to protect our children. It fails to protect our love, the love of parents, the love between husband and wife. 50% of people who go through Child Protective Services end up getting divorced because the pain that they inflict is devastating. You're trying to put things back together, and some things just can't be fixed.
But, of course, you have to understand there really are people who want to disrupt the marriage. There really are people who want to do harm, because there is evil in our society.
Well,
and some of these people are just inherently evil. And when you understand that, then, of course, a lot of this is not mysterious at all. There really are wicked people within the legal system. Now, there are a lot of good people. I think there are more good people than bad people. The trouble is the good people won't take a stand. And the bad people, of course, are in positions of power.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that they say because children don't fall under the Sixth Amendment of life, liberty, or property, that therefore they have a right to take them out of your care.
Where does it say that in the Constitution?
Yeah, exactly. But that's what they've got. That's how they've got a whole different court system, is they're saying your children aren't your life, liberty, or property.
But
and I'm
see,
like,
the
heck they aren't. They're all three.
Yeah, that's the trouble is that you could demand, what they're trying to do is intimidate you. And when they try to use the law to intimidate people, rather than, of course, to get fairness, and the idea, well, if you're going to demand a jury trial, why, the judge is going to be mad at you. I mean, you can demand a jury trial and you can demand an independent judge. And so see, that's the thing that they don't want, is that you have the right to demand this under the Constitution, and they don't want you to know your constitutional rights.
Right. The very first thing that they said, the judge said, is, so have they given up their rights? And my husband and I looked at each other, and our lawyers both nodded their heads yes, and we looked at each other like, what? Did we give up our right? We didn't even know what was going on. I mean, we were clueless as to what was happening. And then that it's based
on you could bring a lawsuit against your lawyer for doing that, because if you didn't, he did not tell you you were waiving your rights, he had no right to represent you then.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's why she dropped all cases after me. And one of the last sentence she said to me was, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Did the judge begin to recognize what was going on or what?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, that's why I finally got my kids back. It turns out in California, once your kids are removed, you only have a 50% chance of ever getting them back.
Well, did you get a good judge then who really tried to do the right thing?
No, I don't feel so at all. In fact, I think that she was not. I mean, she said, why wasn't I told these children were in charter school? It was definitely in the records that they were in charter school. There's no question that they were, that was on paper. Meanwhile, their lawyer said at one point, for instance, that my child had a infected umbilical cord, a belly button. Meanwhile, the actual wording in the medical record was herniated, which means simply an outie instead of an innie, And they used that, saying that, oh, my child was in danger. I didn't take him to the doctor for an outie instead of an innie. I mean, they basically lied, and they only need a preponderance. It's based on 49-51. If the judge thinks there's 51% chance that you might be an abuser, she removes the children.
Well,
and all allegations, she has to take as facts. And the Child Protective Services just threw as much allegations against us as they possibly could.
This is what they do in the courts today. They go in for some sort of a charge, and they just keep adding charges and charges and charges on top of charges, and pretty soon you're facing 1,000 years in prison. Either that or you agree to go to jail for 6 months. I mean, do you want to go to jail for 1,000 years or plea for 2 months or something like that?
Yeah.
And this is total abuse of power.
Oh, big time. I think at least the social workers should see what it's like to have your child arbitrarily removed without your consent, without warning. Just take your kid for a day or two, so these social workers who do this to parents, let the social workers who have children lose their kids for a day or two and see how devastating it is.
And
I'm not talking just adopted children.
Take away from
the
social workers. You have to understand, Tammy, there are different laws for the elite and for the bureaucracy than for us common folks. And I know I've been told this, by people who work, and they sort of laugh and they say, well, we work with these people. We have different laws for us.
Well, that's the thing. I know a woman who's in charge of the placement services here in Santa Cruz now, originally worked over the hill in a Christian organization placing children. She got a job here, and now she wants out. She's like, I can't stand what's going on. I want out. And, she basically can't get out because they're like, well, if you get out, you're not going to get a job anywhere else, and you better not let anybody know what we're doing. I have a friend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who has a friend that just got a job working for social services where she takes parents to their visitation hour, and she writes down notes while she's with the kids. And basically, this woman has three children under the age of 12 that she leaves at home alone quite often. I mean, she's a terrible parent. She barely makes dinner for her kids. They fend for themselves most of the time. And she's got thousands of dollars in bad checks. She's got credit card debt that she doesn't even intend to pay, something like $25,000 worth. She has no education. She's, just not even high school diploma. And she was hired to do this. And when she writes down those notes and they take them to court, if she decides to make it look really bad, which she can, they will lose, that woman will not get her children back. The women, it's mostly a crime against women. that's the thing, is that it's women who are staying with the children most of the time. You know, in most cases, it's the mothers that are taking care of the children, and they're saying, oh, this mother has, you know, questionable psychological problems. And you can say that about anybody. They don't have a standard of what's a good mother, what's an ideal. You know, that's why I didn't have any fear. I think there's a lot of good moms out there who know that they're good and who think, well, if they come in, they're not going to find anything wrong with me, so what do I have to fear? And that's the thing, is that that's the kind of mom that they're looking for. If you think that you can beat their system, think again, because your children are a wonderful commodity that a whole lot of people will pay a lot of money for. And that's the thing, is that the money for children, they've got it set up that if people want to give an anonymous donation of maybe $50,000, they can get the blonde-haired, blue-eyed one that's cute and healthy. You know, this is the thing, is that the money, the billions of dollars...
Now, wait a minute. Now, are you actually suggesting, who gets the $50,000? And, you know, does this really go on? Can you actually prove that?
This, that situation actually was documented in a case that happened in... Southern California. It was actually a private adoption agency. It wasn't CPS, so I have to say that it may not be happening with CPS, but this woman wanted to get children into good Christian homes was her motivation, so she had a good motivation. But the one case where she adopted one child out, that the mother had actually signed, and she couldn't read and write. And so because she signed with an X, later she was able to get that child back. But it turns out that the couple that adopted that child had given $50,000 cash to get the beautiful, healthy girl.
Well, who got the $50,000?
The person in charge of the adoption agency.
Oh, boy, I hope they went to prison over that.
I think they probably got a slap on the wrist from what I can tell. I doubt it. I mean, the thing is that, like you said, it's a different law for those in power. And, you know, she was... Who knows? You know, that's kind of a twisted motivation, if you ask me, because to give children away, I mean, the parents, the ones who have the children, even though they might be poor, I mean, look at Einstein. Look at all the wonderful people who've come from poor backgrounds who do something great. Poverty shouldn't be a crime.
It sure isn't. Tammy, we're out of time. God bless you. And
yeah, thank
you. I
hope
you'll come on again. I'd like to get you on other programs. Mm-hmm. I think your message is so important.
Yeah, I really want to see video surveillance and keep families together. There's no reason to just rip families apart. Let them stay together. At least give them the option to stay together under video surveillance. If they can do Big Brother game shows, they should be able to take care of families.
Well, I don't want them to have videos in my home.
I'd rather do that than rip my children away from my arms.
Bye-bye. Good
bye.
Night.
Thank
okay,
you.
This is Dr. Stan, and you can tell how passionately Tammy feels, and with good reason. Well, for those in the Great Northwest, please pray for my ministry. Till tomorrow, Dr. Stan. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 464-8295 in the Central Coast of California, 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America. And we're right now, we're going to have, hopefully, Jane Armstrong in with us. He's the new chairman of the Republican Central Committee. And I thought we'd just talk a little bit about politics here tonight. And if you're a Democrat, call in. We'd like to hear your view of what's going on in the state and the nation. And, you know, of course, it's really a very interesting situation we have now. It says this line has been disconnected. Well, we may very well have open lines tonight then. We'll just have, I'll ask our producer to come in here and first of all to try the telephone number just one more time. And then if you can't get it, why, of course, to, I guess we'll just have to have open lines. If we don't have, they said the line has been disconnected, so we don't have anything prepared at all. Well, that always makes things fun. So I'd like to know what you think about the coming war with Iraq. Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it's not a good idea? The statistics show that the support for the war has gone from a well over 60% down to about 50%, maybe 1 or 2% above that. So we're going to just talk to Ed here for a moment. I'll be right back with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, I wonder what you're thinking is now. Of course, apparently the commission, UN inspection team has said that they want to have more time. Gary Bauer just came up with a report, and he noted that Hans Blix delivered a surprisingly tough report to the United Nations this morning, but in true UN fashion, it had on one hand and then on the other hand conclusions. Critics of the administration will embrace the part of the report that states that the inspectors have been unable so far to find any evidence of banned weapons activity or weapons production facilities. But they're missing the main point. The inspectors were not supposed to prove that Iraq had banned weapons. Rather, Iraq was supposed to account for the whereabouts of the banned weapons that every government in the world, including France, Germany, China, and Russia, knew that Iraq had. Now, Blix conceded in his report today that Iraq's 12,000-page declaration had not answered that question on the location of the XV nerve gas, a material used for biological agents such as anthrax, 550 artillery shells filled with nerve gas, and 6,500 chemical bombs. Nonetheless, the Bush administration apparently will go along with giving the inspectors more time. I can only hope we're doing so because we don't yet have in place the military assets enough to prosecute the war. The best bet now is that no action until late February. The BBC reported over the weekend that Saddam Hussein is preparing to use weapons of mass destruction, which of course he doesn't have, against our allied forces. Elite units of the Iraqi military have been outfitted with new chemical warfare suits and supplies of the drug atropine, which is used to neutralize the effects of nerve gas. Since it's inconceivable that the United States, Britain, or our allies would use nerve gas against Iraq, the only logical explanation is that Saddam Hussein plans to use it and is trying to protect his own troops. Well, that's a very interesting thought. But I wonder, of course, why Gary Bauer can be sure we're not going to use nerve gas. Certainly, we signed all sorts of agreements not to use it, but we used it there in Laos and during the Vietnam War. That was Operation Tailwind. And, you know, that was one of the most amazing stories. which we had the opportunity to survey, actually. Operation Tailwind was an operation where we dropped maybe 15 or 20 special forces along with 100 Montagnards into Laos. Now, we weren't supposed to do that. That was against the law. We weren't supposed to be fighting out of the side of Vietnam, but we dropped the troops in. And, of course, in a regular form, we dropped them into the Viet Cong Command Center. I don't know how many of you saw the movie, Soldiers with Mel Gibson came out. Amazingly enough, immediately after the September 11th attack, you just wonder how they happen to have all these movies ready and waiting to begin to engender the war or the martial spirit. They came out, they'd been in production for 2 years, but they all seem to correspond with the 9/11 attack. But in that story, we were soldiers. Why? They just happened to drop the American forces into an ambush. And of course, you remember the story of Black Hawk Down, why we dropped the American forces into an ambush. Well, that's what happened with Operation Tailwind. They just happened to drop the American troops into an ambush. We dropped them into a Viet Cong command center in Laos. Their instructions were to kill deserters, and that's what they were there for. And also, they were all given, all of our men were given poison, they were given gas masks. And of course, we were told that at one point that they were to call in for gas attack to neutralize the enemy, which is what happened. Now, this was really a tragic situation. Our men came under intense fire. They did kill, and I actually interviewed Lieutenant von Buskirk, who was the second in command of the unit. They did kill the American deserters. He killed several of them. That was what he was told to do, and when you're in war, you do what you're told to do. And So he saw these look like Americans run down into a hole, into a tunnel, and he went over to the hole and he called out, I'm here to take you home, come on out. And they cursed at him, and so he just put in a grenade and blew them up. But then, of course, because of the intense fire our men came under, because they were in the Viet Cong command post, they called for the counterattack for the gas. They put on the gas masks, and all of our men, of course, were safe. The gas masks protected our men, and all of the enemy were totally incapacitated because it was a sarin type of gas, and, of course, in violation of all international law. Well, when the story came out on CNN, and of course, the story was produced by a woman named April Oliver, and of course, it was the voiceover by Peter Arnett, and of course, it was all across America. Why? The United Nations used poison gas in violation of international agreements during the Vietnam War, and furthermore, they killed deserters. And furthermore, they were in Laos, all these three things in total violation of the law under which we were fighting. And so, of course, then immediately, there were lawsuits brought against CNN, and Peter Arnett was suspended, and April Oliver, who had produced the film, and it was fully documented, there was no question it was right, she was fired, and of course, she was sued by several of the people, several of the military officers. Somebody put the military officers up to suing her. And they were going to destroy her career. Why? Because she told the truth. And you're not supposed to do that when you're in the military. Actually, if you want to read this story, it's in a book entitled Into the Buzzsaw, which is available through Radio Liberty. It's written by Christian Borgensen, who tried to tell the story of what happened with TW-800, but you're not supposed to tell the truth. I mean, the Fourth Estate in America has become the fifth column, and there are a lot of wonderful people who work in the media. But of course, when they really get into the true story of what's going on, Gary Webb, who actually blew the story about the CIA and drug smuggling and bringing drugs into the United States that were taken to the inner city of Los Angeles and corrupting the black and Hispanic population. I mean, his career was destroyed. Kristen Borgeson's career was destroyed. April Oliver's career was destroyed. But April Oliver was a little bit smarter than the rest of them. And when she was sued, she got a lawyer and she countersued. And she countersued some high military men, and she countersued CNN, and she countersued all these people who were, now I don't know whether she actually brought a suit against CNN, but of course she countersued all the people who were suing her. And we have the deposition given by Admiral Thomas Moore. And to his credit, this is a man of integrity. I mean, he's well into his 80s now. He was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Vietnam era. And when push came to shove, he admitted that the entire Tailwind story was true. Well, of course, when the story came out of why April Oliver was vilified by the general media, and of course he carried stories day after day after day after day, week after week, about how terrible she was and irresponsible, and a TV guide had stories about it. I will have to admit, TV guide's story of Operation Tailwind was really fairly impartial. You weren't quite sure of whether it really happened or not. But they did that, give a great deal of both sides of the story, which is better than certainly the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post did. The major media, of course, presented only the one side. It didn't happen. It never happened. America would never use poison gas. America would never violate Laos. America would never kill its deserters. How terrible to say these things, even though Lieutenant von Verskirk had written a book about it. But then, of course, when April Oliver won her case, and though she would never tell me how much money she got, she said that she was going through law school. She bought herself a nice home, a nice car, all with the proceeds that she got from the people on the other side. And, of course, they were forced to settle. And, could you believe it that the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Denver Post and none of the news magazines and none of the major networks that had crucified April Oliver would carry the story about how she was exonerated and how the other side settled with her so they wouldn't have to go to court? Would you believe that the entire media did that and you've never heard the rest of the story of Operation Tailwind? Well, of course, we have four tapes set on that. We have Admiral Moore's testimony. It's all available to our ministry. So when Gary Bauer says we would never use poison gas, I'm not saying we're going to, but all I could say was, why are we, immunizing the American troops for anthrax? Why are we giving them a potentially dangerous vaccine that's really caused a tremendous unrest within the military, fighter pilots, bomber pilots have simply quit the military, the reserve pilots have quit because they wouldn't take the vaccine because there was such a high incidence of people with a chronic fatigue or Gulf War-like syndrome from the series of anthrax shots. And of course, you have to take really 6 shots over 18 months to have a full immunization. So, you're only getting a partial immunization unless you've gone through the full series of shots. And most of these people were sent over before. Everything would point out that certainly some of the Gulf War syndrome during the first Gulf War was related to the anthrax, the experimental anthrax shots that were given to our troops without their knowledge or consent. And so, it's a little wonder that so many of the military men in recent years have refused to take the anthrax shots. Some of them have gone to prison. Some of them have been fined $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and their military careers have been destroyed for refusing to take the anthrax. But why would our military do this? Because, of course, the anthrax vaccine is not good for every strain of anthrax. It's only good for one or several strains of anthrax. Unless you knew the strain of anthrax that the enemy was going to use, why, you'd be absurd to actually give your troops anthrax vaccine. Certainly, the antibiotics are just as good, Cipro or doxycycline, much, much cheaper and many fewer complications, are just as good as the anthrax vaccine. Now, if you're going to have really under an anthrax attack with the specific strain of anthrax that you are vaccinated for that is 100% effective, and of course, apparently it is, if you have just the right strain, or, at least 80% effective. When they did this with monkeys, they immunized the monkeys and then they exposed them to pulmonary anthrax, and 8 of the 10 survived. 2 of them died. So that's a 20% fatality rate. But if they didn't have any immunization or any antibiotics, why, they all died. If they either took Cipro or doxycycline, they all lived. If they took they took penicillin, they lived, unless they discontinued it too soon. And then, of course, the pulmonary anthrax came back again. But the only reason that I can see that we are immunizing American troops against anthrax is our military is considering using anthrax on others because they know the strain that's going to be used. That's the only reason you would possibly do that. And that's a horrible thing to contemplate, but you only need to go back and study the Tuskegee study and the fact that they recruited 400 black men, told them they were going to be treated for their syphilis, and of course they intended not to treat them, and nothing was ever done. There are evil and wicked people in this world. You only have to go back and read the story of Gallipoli during the First World War, when Winston Churchill insisted they invade, you know, in the southern part of the Balkans, and of course over in the Asia Minor area, and of course there was no way they could possibly make a break out there. I mean, it was sort of like the Bay of Pigs. You got on the beach, and there was no place to go. 150,000 British troops fell. 150,000 Turkish troops opposing them fell. Absolutely ridiculous. The only purpose behind it was just to create a maximum amount of carnage. And Winston Churchill did the same thing during the Second World War. Winston Churchill was the High Lord of the Admiralty during the First World War. And, of course, he insisted on that, just as he had engineered the sinking of the Lusitania, making sure that it would go down, sending it into an area where they knew there were German U-boats, and ordered it to only go at two-thirds or three-quarter speed, supposedly, or half speed, to save coal. They wanted the ship sunk because they hoped that, of course, out of the carnage and the death of Americans, America would enter the war. Well, fortunately, America didn't enter the war. That happened in 1915, but they kept talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, and never pointed out that this whole thing had been engineered by our State Department. Not by our Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan, who was furious when he heard what had happened, and I think that was one reason why he resigned as Secretary of State, but certainly by Winston Churchill, High Lord of the Admiralty, and beautifully told in Colin Simpson's book on the Lusitania. You need to get it, or certainly Ed Griffin does an excellent job of covering that in his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Well, it doesn't look like we're going to have any callers. Pardon me, our regular guest is not available. So if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're sort of talking about the war in Iraq. We're talking about this idea that Saddam Hussein is planning to use poison gas on American soldiers. Now, do you really think, you know, since the war apparently is going to be fought primarily in the cities, that Saddam Hussein is going to release poison gas on his own troops, on his own civilians? I mean, do you honestly think that? Do you think that anybody, even Saddam Hussein, would use poison gas in Baghdad or in Basra or other city? Of course not. I mean, and of course, apparently Iraq is not going to try to meet our forces in the, you know, out in the desert as they stupidly did in Kuwait. You know, they're going to put their people in the cities, and we're going to have to go in there after them. And of course, there's going to be an awful lot of civilian casualties. And now, apparently, about several thousand people are planning on going over there from England. In other words, these are civilians. They're going to be human shields to embarrass the Americans if they go in. And they're hoping to have as many as 100,000 Europeans and people from England and other countries, just civilians going there, so that if we go in and we kill a lot of Iraqis, we're going to kill a lot of civilians from other countries, and of course, really get a lot of bad press. And these people, well, I think that they are foolish to go over. And yet I'll have to admit that I respect their idealism. I think they don't understand what they're up against. I think that if they die, they will die in a senseless cause. But maybe not. Maybe, of course, it'll take something to get people to understand that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, and we are facing an evil today. Now, I do not think that Saddam Hussein is going to use anthrax in his own country. Do you honestly believe that? When he would, of course, kill millions of civilians, and he would kill, you know, many of his own troops if he were to unleash anthrax or smallpox. So why are we immunizing our American troops against smallpox? In fact, why do we plan to immunize 11 million healthcare workers in the United States against smallpox? There has not been any smallpox released anywhere in the world, and we haven't seen a case here I think since about 1972 and 1973, when the government cut off the use of smallpox vaccine all throughout the world, and you can't get smallpox vaccine. Why can't you get smallpox vaccine? Oh, the government says, we don't want you to take it because there are two people in every million who will get an encephalitis and die. And so we're from the government, and we're here to help you, and we're not going to let you have smallpox vaccine for yourself, for your children, or for anybody else. And nobody in the world can have smallpox vaccine, and this has been going on since the early 70s. And now, suddenly, they're telling us that there may well be a smallpox attack, and, of course, they are going then to have enough vaccine to vaccinate every person in America, but not every person in the world. And so they're going to vaccinate the American military. They're going to vaccinate 10.5 to 11 million healthcare workers in the United States. And, of course, what does this really mean? That means if someone, and I'm not saying who, unleashes smallpox, why, we'll have fairly good immunity here in the United States. We can ring vaccinate those areas. But there will be a terrible epidemic throughout the rest of the world, because there will be no vaccine for the people in the Muslim countries. There will be no vaccine for the people in Africa. There will be no vaccine for the people in Indonesia. There will be no vaccine for the people in South America. There will be vaccine for the American people, but no vaccine for the people of the rest of the world. And perhaps, as George Bernard Shaw said in his book, The Impact of Science on a Society, if we just had a black plague sweep through the world every year, every generation, why, then people could procreate as much as they want to with no limitations. And, of course, you know, an awful lot of people would die, but higher-minded people have very little concern about other people's happiness. Well, let's go to Nathan. Oh, let's put Nathan on. Hi, Nathan, how are you doing?
Astonishing statement, but I'd love to read that in context. You know, those I do know that a lot of those people were definitely Malthusians, and they still are today. And you really do wonder about some of the new diseases and AIDS and so forth. I'm not suggesting I believe they were manufactured.
Why don't you believe that? Have you ever read Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee, where Dr. MacArthur testified, and I believe this was 1968 or 69,
yeah.
We actually have the testimony, where he said we have the ability to create a viral disease for which there'll be no immune response, and another disease that will create chronic incapacity but won't kill.
Well,
and,
what
you
I
know,
was
just
say,
about 6 years, 7 years later, we had the first cases of AIDS. They weren't recognized. We had the first case of AIDS, and about 6 years later, we had the first cases of chronic fatigue syndrome that had never existed before.
Yeah, well, you're right. It's disgusting. And I mean, what I was going to say is, either way, it definitely has been allowed to spread,
right?
As you pointed out. But, yeah, no, I have read that, and it is very scary, and there's a lot of very scary stuff, and there's a lot of cover-ups.
Well, let me just point out to you, and I know you want to talk about something else, Nathan, but you know that there's a Dr. Lowe from the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology who's written extensively about AIDS. He says that every AIDS case has a mycoplasm. Everybody with AIDS has mycoplasm as well as HIV. In other words, there's a cofactor. There are two diseases here. And, of course, the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology has a patent on this genetically modified mycoplasm, this mycoplasm incognitus, which you will find in AIDS cases, in chronic fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, things of that sort. Why would the government have a patent on a part of the AIDS complex of, you know, because it's probably both HIV and mycoplasm are required both together to give you AIDS. So why would the government patent that? They must have created it if they patented it. And if they created it, should we be worried? That is so blatant. And all you need to do, of course, is get Randy Schilt's book and the band played on, and look up the part in the index about hepatitis B. You'll find out that of the homosexuals who took the hepatitis B vaccine in San Francisco area in 1978, almost 80% of them came down with AIDS, whereas in the general population it was less than half that. So why would it be that the people who took the hepatitis B vaccines got the AIDS? at a much higher rate than the people who didn't take the hepatitis B vaccine. Would that suggest to you that maybe, just maybe, why AIDS was in the, what are the precursors of AIDS, which is probably HIV and mycoplasma, was in that hepatitis B vaccine? That's the deduction I would come to.
Well,
and isn't it amazing
time.
That nobody ever mentions that?
And I remember back in the, just comment briefly on this a little further to move on, but I remember back in the very late 70s when I, you know, was a little kid and I was reading about how we had practically eliminated disease except for a few strains of TB in Ethiopia. I distinctly recall that. What's happened since? We have TB all over, HEP, and we have all these plagues, not just AIDS, but other ones too. You know, we have a world that seems like it's, we have places in Africa that seem like they're just coming down with these strange diseases, Ebola.
New diseases.
I'm not saying I have the answers on that, but it sure is strange, I will say, in light of a lot of the things you say. But I don't know enough to really comment any further than that. I did want to talk a little bit about the first hour in the context of, you were bringing up a while ago a Christian minister, we won't say his name, but he was talking about the idea that people should basically obey government, that with some exceptions, but he was talking about how basically we should not, you can phrase it better than I can, but basically that government, since they're instituted by God, we should obey more or less unconditionally.
Right, that of course is the theology of Romans 13. One of the big problems we have today, of course, was used in Hitler's Germany. It's being used in America today to neutralize the church.
Well, certainly, and I think that the last hour definitely demonstrated the fallacy of, I would say, for much of that concept. In other words, we do have a duty to obey civil government, but it is not unlimited, and it definitely is a bound duty that is only to the extent that it behaves as a civil government. And if you look at the actual biblical precedent of, let's say the actual Hebrew biblical commentary, the sort of precedent of Romans 13, that from which I believe it drew from, you find that it's actually a commandment to uphold just courts. That, there's the basic moral precepts that the writers of the New Testament drew from as far as monotheistic Hebrew thought, if you actually look at the commandment to uphold civil government, is the commandment to uphold just courts. So this is my opinion. I don't know what biblical scholars or historians would say, but it's the monotheist is to uphold just courts. That means that if there's something unjust, it's to be challenged. And judges, and says so in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, if you will, judges are to uphold justice. And one of the things that the prophets berated the Israelites, the Jewish people, for was basically allowing judges to not uphold justice, just uphold the interests of the strong and to disregard the weak. And it's your duty. It's not a right. It's not a freedom. I agree with this particular gentleman that we need to uphold civil government, and I also agree with him that we don't have a right to oppose it if it's wrong. I believe we have a duty to oppose it if it's wrong. We talk a lot about our rights, but it's really a duty. You have to do the right thing. You have to stand for your country and, yes, pray for its leaders, and I agree with them, and yes, uphold its laws, and I agree with that, but you have to do it from a muscular standpoint. You have to do it from an involved standpoint, and I think that I exhort your audience to understand obedience to civil government, to pray over it, and I believe that you will be led to the conclusion that it's the commandment to uphold justice, not the commandment to uphold necessarily whatever policies are there, and that's how it seems to me.
Well, I certainly wouldn't disagree with you at all, and I think one of the greatest stories out of the Old Testament comes from 1 Samuel, the 8th chapter, where the story of course, what happened to the children of Israel, who actually did live free at that time. The only structure of government they had was God's law, and then they had judges to enforce that law. And of course, as you remember, the judges who were Samuel's sons had become corrupt, and they weren't judging according to God's law. They were just out to get all that they could. And of course, it was that corruption of the judiciary that caused the leaders of the 12 tribes to come to Samuel and announce they wanted a king. And you know the story. Well, I'm going to have to take a break. Do you want to hang on till
sure.
after the break?
I'd love to.
Okay, fine. You go ahead. We'll be back with Nathan in just a moment. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we, of course, depend upon those of you who listen to our programs on a regular basis to help us do what we do. And we have listeners really all over the world. It's exciting to know that we have people listening in Australia and New Zealand and in Germany, and we have a gentleman in Austria, I think it is, who you know, is ordering things from us, and I know we have listeners in Great Britain. What a wonderful opportunity it is to have our ideas put forward and expressed and then picked up by others. I got a call from a gentleman in New Zealand just this evening, and somebody had given him a tape of an interview I did with Ed Griffin, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, talking about Laetril and, of course, his book, A World Without Cancer. And these tapes are out there. Of course, they all come from Radio Liberty Broadcast. And what a wonderful privilege it is to have the opportunity to spread the truth across America and across the world. So when you join the Radio Liberty family, why, you become part of everything that I do. I can't do what I do without the dedicated support and sacrificial giving of people who believe in what we're doing and believe it's right. So if you'd like to consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will tell others about our programs, get them listening to the programs, and have them go to our website at radioliberty.com. If you'd like a copy of one of our newsletters, our October newsletter dealt with what happened on September 11th, our November newsletter dealt with, of course, what's happening, how September 11th was used to take away our freedom, restrict our freedom in the name of fighting those wicked terrorists, of course. And then the December newsletter dealt with finances and what's happening as far as our nation from a financial point of view. And the occult forces within our financial system. And in fact, I just got a note from Nathan, who's on the holding on the line, about that, and I appreciate his words of agreement on much of what we'd said in that December newsletter. Then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our website at radioliberty.com. You'll get people listening to our programs, and that you'll decide to join in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. So again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our website is radioliberty.com. And we'll be right back here. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our regularly scheduled guest, well, for some reason she wasn't available, so we'll look forward to your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Nathan's on the line, and Nathan was talking about the Old Testament statement that you had to support just courts and just judges, and I was simply pointing out how in 1 Samuel chapter 8, the story of course, what happened when the children of Israel lived free under the Ten Commandments, under God's law, and all they had was judges. And, of course, how those judges betrayed the trust put in them. And it was because the people were so unhappy with the judges and with the corruption that they went to Samuel and said, we want a king. And Samuel said, you don't want a king. And they said, yeah, we want a king. We want a king to lead us in battle, and we want a king to rally behind. And so Samuel went to the Lord and said, Lord, they want a king. And the Lord said, Samuel, it's not that they've turned against you. They've turned against me. Give them a king. But tell them what will happen, and they'll have to, work for the king. They'll ride, run beside his chariots. They'll work in his gardens. They'll lose their manservant and maidservant, and he'll take a tenth of whatever they have. Of course, in those days, kings were pretty much pikers compared to the IRS today. But of course, Samuel gave them Saul, the first king of Israel, and then of course he was replaced by David, and David was replaced by Solomon, and And then, of course, the kings, actually a series of very depraved and wicked kings came, ending up, some were good, some were bad, but they sort of deteriorated till we ended up with Ahab and Jezebel. And, because of the corruption of society, why the children of Israel were taken away in bondage, and then they came back again, and they were loyal to the Lord, and then they turned again away from the Lord again, and it seems to be the story over and over again, but it all started with the corruption of the courts, and I'm sure you know those stories, don't you, Nathan?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Of course, Ahab and Jezebel weren't the line of Judah, they were the Davidian. They were the Israel, the kings of the other 10 tribes, and they went first, and then Judah went next, pretty much because of what you were talking about. The corruption and the degeneration. I more or less will agree with what you're saying. Of course, I'm talking about something even more general than that. I mean,
sure.
All the nations have to uphold just courts, the courts that are courts of justice. And I think that it seems as though we in America have forgotten that. At one time, we had courts that were definitely set up according to some kind of a model of righteousness, that we had judges who believed very much in what they were doing, even, believe it or not, lawyers who believed in what they were doing, if you believe that. But it seems as though somewhere around after the Civil War, or maybe it was later than that, maybe it was earlier than that, I don't know, but somehow, some way, the idea got lost, and I think that there are terrible consequences when it does. Now, maybe it's lost and it's regained, but we need to get back to the concept that law is about justice, and that it's not simply about how much money a lawyer has. And you're right, that was in 1 Samuel chapter 8, that was what ended the theocratic Israel and began Israel's course into a monarchy and then eventually into exile. That's what ended the pure system of government that they had before Saul was this corruption. And when Samuel's sons were unable to assume the reins of government, that was it. Basically, a measure of justice, a measure of God's will for Israel was gone. And that can happen to any nation. Any nation that abandons the basic laws of God, the laws of God that bind on the nations, the laws of God that bind on the whole world and not just the Jews, any nation that strays from that, those basic cardinal principles that should bind on everybody, no idolatry, no blasphemy, you know, no murder, no stealing, no sexual immorality, animal cruelty, and to uphold just courts. I mean, any nation that strays from those principles is basically courting death. And I think you can see this in history over and over again. And I'm admonishing your listeners to take a stand for biblical righteousness, to take a stand for, you know, if you want to call it a Christian nation, fine. Whatever you want to call it, take a stand for it. Don't just talk about it. Don't just have some kind of intellectual belief in it. If you believe in it, do it. And take a stand in the right way, in the righteous way, not in a stupid way or in a unthinking way, but take a stand. And that's what I'm going to leave your listeners with tonight. That's how it seems to me. Greatly appreciate it.
Very well said, Nathan. Thank you so very much. And thank you for your letter. I appreciate it. And if you're out there in the listening audience, I do read all the letters we get. I sometimes don't get around to answering them because, well, we just have such a volume of material, and some of the emails were probably 3 or 4 months behind on. I hope one of these days I'll get caught up. But we do want you to know that when they come in, I read everything that at least that comes through, and my son pulls down the emails, because we get hundreds of them, but he gives me all those that he thinks I need to see, and we do go through them, and if you don't get an answer, I apologize, but doing 5 hours of talk radio a day, we don't have an awful lot of time for many of the things I wish we did do, but certainly I believe that what Nathan said is so true. The one thing that I could say is, you know, that our friend Brad Dacus has about 1,000 lawyers on the West Coast that, of course, he can go to help him defend some of these cases. Well, there are a lot of lawyers out there. There just aren't a majority. There are only maybe a small minority. But 1,000 lawyers on the West Coast, let's say that's pretty good. We do have people out there. I know we have a lawyer over in the San Jose area who supports us, and he actually has his own church there, and he is a minister and has sermons every Sunday. Ken does a great job, but he comes from a legal point of view, and you know, we have good lawyers. We shouldn't pick on lawyers, but unfortunately, there's so many of them are so corrupt. But there are some of them who are good people too, and they may not necessarily even be coming from a Christian point of view. But of course, we just need to support those that are honest and go to them. And it's just such a shame that America as a nation has turned its back on God. Oh, well, we got Eric calling. Eric, where are you from?
Compton, Dr. Sands.
Okay, fine. Good to have you with us.
Oh, I'm a little nervous.
Have you called before?
Yes, I have.
Okay, fine.
I listen all the time, but I don't call very often.
Okay, that's fine.
I just want to let you know that I whenever I have the opportunity, I work with the public, and I'm always giving out your website and trying to get people to listen. But part of the problem is that they don't understand Jeremiah 17:9, the condition of the human heart.
Amen.
They have no idea how evil people really are, and it's just hard to get people to understand the things you talk about, the things you discuss. But every now and then, it's surprising. I'm listening to somebody who knows a little bit about this, a little bit about that. Some guy who fixes doors came into my store one day, and I got to talking about stuff, and there were those 226 Marines that were blown up in that barracks.
Yeah, we've been over in Beirut.
In Beirut, yeah. Right. He said he was over there when that happened, and he said he was just telling me a little bit of kind of the stuff that he knew about. And he said he saw that coming. They took away all the, he said they saw them take away the guards, and then they took away some pillars. That, I mean, just, he knew that they set that up.
I really believe you're probably right. This wonderful book, See No Evil, by Robert Baer, tells about the fact, you remember that they, first of all, they attacked the embassy, and then they attacked the barracks. And they knew that they were going to attack the embassy, and they did absolutely nothing about it. They even knew who'd done it, and they did nothing about them. So even back here, and this is the early 80s, we were playing footsie with the Islamic terrorists and allowing them to get away with these things, leaving our boys, of course, to pay the terrible, terrible price. The people in the embassy, they knew the attack was coming on the embassy, and of course it was after that, after they'd blown up the embassy, that they went after the barracks. So, yeah, there are a lot of good people out there. Eric, can I make a suggestion, though? If you run into somebody that, you know, is not interested, I mean, you know, sometimes you can just carry on a conversation.
I run into that all the time.
But if they're not interested, then ask him questions. Gee, what would happen if we had a biological attack in America? What would happen if, you know, if the market keeps dropping and the dollar is destroyed? What would happen to, you know, the savings of the people, the pensions of the people, the annuities, the insurance policies, all these things people are counting on, you know? And of course, you're asking the question because, of course, you want them to begin to think.
Right.
You know, sometimes, in fact, one of my favorite stories. I had an opportunity to meet D. James Kennedy mm-hmm. one time. And
I love Dr. Kennedy.
Go ahead.
I love Dr. Kennedy.
I do too. But I'd never met him before, and we were at a meeting back in Washington, D.C., it's amazing how God works in the affairs of men. I'll never forget this. It was evening, and I was bunking with John Stormer, and so we went down to the dining room for dinner, and John knows everybody who's anybody, and he said, why, there's Dr. Kennedy. Why don't we go over and sit with him? And so I said, gee, that sounds like a great idea, and we went over and introduced ourselves, and of course, Dr. Kennedy started to talk. But he told this wonderful story about how he had come to be a Christian. And he had been actually an instructor at an Arthur Murray dance studio. And of course, he had to work until 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. And then, of course, he slept in late in the morning, and he'd always leave his radio on to wake him up. And so this one morning, he's laying in bed, you know, and he hears his voice. Now, what had happened, of course, somebody had changed the station. Ordinarily, he got up to rock music or something of the sort, and he heard this voice came out of nowhere, and it said, "What would happen if you were to die tomorrow? Would you spend eternity in heaven?" And, you know, and he's sort of looking around. He doesn't know where this voice is coming from. And then the next thing the voice says is, "And if you were to stand at the gates of heaven, and St. Peter would ask you, why should you be admitted, what would you say?" And somebody else said, "Well, I'd tell him I'd been a good man." And the voice said, "That's the wrong answer." Well, you know, he was in sort of a half stupor state. He never even thought about any of these standard questions that every one of us should ask non-believers. And, you know, and of course, he suddenly realized that it was the radio, and it was a professor named Barnhouse, or a teacher, a minister named Barnhouse, one of the great ministers of, you know, the past. And that had, those questions had such a profound impact on him that within a few months, he had quit his job and he was off to seminary. And just those questions being asked, and we can ask questions. You know, sometimes we want to tell people so much, and you try to tell people so much, and boy, you can see their eyes glaze over,
yeah,
and
they
can hardly wait to get away from you. Whereas if you ask them a question and you make them think, why, of course, sometimes you'll get through to people so much easier that way. And, of course, if you had just happened to have a couple of audio tapes, you can give them, you know, after you've asked a question.
I have many of your tapes, I can say.
Well,
you know what? And thank you so much for that suggestion. I'm going to change my tactics. I do have a tendency to try and tell people things. I've started asking questions. I work with a lot of young people, and it's like I'm speaking, and it's like, the things they say back to me, it's like they're not even thinking. There's no depth of the thought whatsoever. It's like a machine is running. I just want to push to a stop button someplace. I say, "Aren't you hearing what I'm saying?" But I've been into this thing. I heard Bull Gripe. You familiar with Colonel Bull Gripe?
Sure, I know him, right?
I heard him on a radio station, KPFK. I now own that. The government owns that, too. But I heard him on a radio station. I started listening to this guy, and I couldn't go to sleep. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. He's who got me interested into this, like, one world stuff, and I've been in it for about 11 years now. And I've been listening to you for about 8 years, and I just praise the Lord for you and all the work that you do. You haven't said anything that I disagree with up to this point. I have many of your videos. I think you're right on. I applaud your courage. I don't, some of the things you say, it scares me sometimes. It's the truth. But I know these people and what the things that they do, and I just, God has to have his hand on you.
He does. I've got an awful lot of people praying for us.
I believe that. And, you know, even my church, sometimes I don't know how to approach my pastor, but I think I'm going to have to. He had some guy come in Sunday and tell us about this government program where they give free computers. You can actually get a computer for no charge to homeschool your kid. But it's government sponsored, and I've been at this long enough to know if the government is sponsoring it, there is a catch someplace. You know it, Dr. Sand, and I know it.
Sure.
So finally, I went into the lobby, and I was to ask the guy a question, and a young lady was speaking with him, and she beat me to it. She said, "Well, what's the catch?" She just point blank asked the guy, and sure enough, he says, "Well, there is someone that will come around once or twice a month and check on something to make sure you're something. And that was the catch. They're gonna structure it.
Sure, they're gonna be coming into your home. Did you hear the first hour?
Yes, and thank you so much for. I appreciate that lady saying you made a comment about watch who you let in your house.
Right.
I have 3 adopted children, and one of them has asthma, and they were you know, drug babies. It's a long story, but anyway, this was a government sponsored program. They wanted to come in and check for asthma, and I was just totally against that. I didn't like the idea of strangers coming in my home. And then I heard you say that tonight. Don't let anybody in your house you don't know.
Amen.
And that just resonated with me because I just know that if they had a chance, they would take my 3 nieces, grandnieces from me if they had a chance. And I don't want to give them that opportunity. I love those girls.
Well,
my wife and I.
Well, I tell you what, the story she told, you know, this woman comes in, you know, and she comes in, you know, at dinner time, and you know, she asks to use the bathroom, and, you know, and she was just there to snoop around, and that's what it's all about. And she was coming to bring him a computer. They were going to get a free computer.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is nothing free.
Nothing.
Right, absolutely. beware of a government official bearing gifts. I think it used to say, beware of an Arab bearing gifts, a Greek bearing gifts. That was it. I think that had to do with a Trojan horse. But,
yeah.
You know, certainly beware of a government official bearing gifts, because they're going to get you one way or
they're
another.
They're going to get you. One other thing, Dr. Sen, I was punching up one of your other programs and listening to it on the Internet last night, and I heard it was about a financial show. It was financial show, and the guy made a comment about this being a socialistic government, socialism. And you know what, Dr. Sen? You look at how they're taking kids away from parents, loving parents. You look at they're mandating this, and you can't say anything negative about homosexuals and using our money for abortions and all kind of crazy. You know what? I got to tell you, this is socialism.
You're absolutely right. And the average individual
has no understanding whatsoever.
Has no understanding whatsoever. Until, of course, their ox gets bored. And then, of course, you know, they just get furious. How could this happen? Well, people don't understand. Freedom is one ball of wax. But, you know, rather than wait until it hits them, we've got to make them realize what's going on. We've got to make them think. And you're so right. Most people do not think today. They've been intentionally dumbed down. But, you know, within most people, there is that longing for freedom. They just never lived without it, and they can't imagine we could ever lose it. And yet, you know, it's like all these people today who are all in favor of this war over in Iraq. But if they understood that this might well be fought on the streets of America, it might be fought with biological warfare agents and terrorism here, why, they would think a second time. You know, it's one thing when somebody else is going to die. It's another thing when it's your family that's going to die. And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but there is that potential. And when I begin reading in the Foreign Affairs magazine, the theoretical journal of our invisible government, and I'm speaking now of Richard K. Betts article in the January-February issue of this year, 2003, in Foreign Affairs, talking about how nobody is talking about the fact that Saddam Hussein might well retaliate against America. Now, it may not even be Saddam Hussein. It could be, well, maybe the same people who sent those anthrax letters that would be bringing the smallpox and unleashing it here, or some other chemical or biological agent. But be that as it may, I really believe that if we get into this war, there is the potential for disaster for America financially, because I think that we are going to begin to lose the confidence of the people of the world, and I believe other countries are really going to begin withdrawing their money from this nation, fearful that of the consequences. They don't want to lose their value of their money. If they start pulling their money out of this country, why, of course, you're going to see the greatest crash. You know.
Well, you know, you and I know, Dr. Sen, that this country is bankrupt. We've been out of money for years.
Amen to that. Well, we're in real trouble. That's why if you're following the commodities, you're finding the gold and silver and platinum, and all of these things are moving up. Even some of the other basic commodities are moving up.
You know what, Dr. Sandy, if I'm going to ask you a quick question, I know it's taking up a lot of time, but you know what? I've been on my job for 34 years. I'm only 51 years old. Well, I'll be 51 in April, and I'll be able for full retirement this year. And it's like the guy was saying on the program I was listening to last night, that money that they're going to give me every month will be nothing now. It takes a wheelbarrow full of money for a loaf of bread. So I'm going to have to call that number, because I don't have a lot of money, but I need to make some type of investment in something, gold or silver. I guess I can get the information from them when I call. I need to do something.
All right. Well, there is a gentleman that you can call me off the air, and I'll give you the number of a fellow who I think will treat you right.
What number do I call?
Well, just call 800-544-8927. I'll call you back, but I don't want to put that out
now.
It's a little off the subject, but I'll be glad to at least give you a gentleman who I think will be honest with you. And you know, I've been very pleased with so far with everybody that I've sent to him. I think and his advice is sound. He's basically saying he thinks the best possible investment right now is in silver coins, and I agree with that. Because, of course, there's a tremendous potential for a rise in silver, because there's going to be a shortage. Gold, right now, they've been able to control pretty well, although it is, I think, they're beginning to lose control of gold. And, you know, once the central banks lose control of gold and people have something to trade in other than their phony fiat money, then this whole house of cards will come tumbling down. And with that, of course, I fear will come our freedom as well, because when things get bad and when people are out of work and there's chaos in the streets, who do people look to? Well, they look to government to restore order without realizing that many times government creates problems so they can justify a solution.
Right. Okay, well, give me the number one more time. I'm sorry.
Oh, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARREN. And we'll give you a call back off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless you. And thanks
God
so much
you.
For calling, Eric.
Thank
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Eric calling from Compton. And, well, we're just about out of time. I sometimes enjoy the times that we have when they don't have any regularly scheduled programs. We get a chance to chat with people and to share some of my thoughts and ideas. But I hope that you enjoyed the program, that it's been worth your time. And, of course, we've got some great programs coming up later. We're going to have Craig Roberts on here later this week. That'll be on Friday. Dr. John Eidsmo will be on Friday evening from 9 to 10. Of course, we're going to have tomorrow evening, we're going to have John Spring will be with us. Bob Chapman will be here talking on finances. If you listen to our afternoon program, 4 to 5, well, we're going to have Bill Federer talking about George Washington Carver. If you listen to our early morning program tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock on the American Freedom Network, we'll have Craig Roberts. And he's going to be talking about, of course, what's happening to this country, the fact that they haven't sealed our borders at all, that terrorists are coming across the border. They're paying $10,000 to come into this country. Why aren't we trying to seal our borders? Why aren't we doing any of the logical things that we would do if we were really at war with terrorism? And, of course, the answer to that is we're not at war with terrorism. The threat of terrorism is being used to take away the freedom of the American people. And if you get our latest newsletter, our January newsletter, I just wrapped up tonight, and we simply go into what's known about the anthrax attack that was used by the administration to pass the USA Patriot Act by frightening and intimidating the members of Congress. And, of course, you remember letters were sent to both Senator Leahy and Senator Daschle. And, of course, why did they send them? The leaders of the Democratic Party, Democrat senators? And, of course, basically the letter said, oh, yeah, we're from Al-Qaeda and we've got anthrax and, boy, you're in real trouble. They wrote this out in the letters. Why would they do something like that? When, of course, this was obviously came from our own military supplies, and we simply quote a two-page ad that appeared in the Washington Times on the 26th of August last year, pointing out that, of course, the Defense Department had contracted with a special company, and they told them to find out how best to send anthrax to the mail. And, of course, the company came up with a specific amount of anthrax and specific size of the spores. You know, that's exactly the amount, the size that was in those letters that those wicked terrorists sent out. Or maybe they didn't come from the wicked terrorists. Did you know the CIA had supplies of anthrax? We've got all the documentation on it, but, of course, I don't think Barbara Walters is going to tell you that. What was the CIA doing with anthrax? Why would they have supplies of anthrax at this Central Intelligence Agency? Those are the same people, of course, who financed Al-Qaeda, who financed the Taliban, who are still running the war over there in Afghanistan, who got us into the war in Vietnam, who killed President Kennedy. And if you haven't read the book, Regicide, you need to get that. That's Regicide by Gregory Douglas. It's the CIA files on the assassination of President Kennedy and why they killed him and how they killed him and who they got to kill him and how much it cost him. It's all there in the book, Regicide. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.
someone get a audience, get an audience with Mark Tracy? Does a person have to call in and get an appointment? Okay. Tammy called back and said this was her mailing address in case somebody called and wanted to get in contact with her.
Okay. She's really was very, very nice.
Oh, that was...
Wasn't I just so
good? Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I mean, the emotion she spoke with. And the second evening, the second hour wasn't bad. I was glad Nathan called. His points were well made. Nathan's Jewish. And we've been talking to him for a long time about Christianity, but he hasn't come that final step. But he acknowledges, you know, that the influence of Christianity is. And a nice young man. Oh, you get the population control.
Because I managed to find one.
Right. Well, we appreciate you coming up and helping.
Oh, you bet, sir.